Hello and welcome everyone. This is Dr. Rita Marie Loscalzo and we're here for our NEPT case study call for the month of September. Recall and reminder for those new and for those who haven't been on a lot of these are the kit calls where you can submit in advance a case for me to review. And there's a specific case study form which I'll show you because the folks that have done it have submitted them on the form, and we usually like to get those 48 hours in advance so that we have time to set them up. I think Terry, you sent it a few hours ago, but we didn't have a whole bunch of them, so we will do it. I just will not have reviewed any of your stuff in advance, because if it's not sent to us 48 or minimum 24 hours in advance, you send it the same day, there's no way I have even a second of free time. Haven't even had dinner, let alone lunch today. So, but I will go through it, and we'll go through some of the kind of the guidelines to make these really effective. I think the case study calls are one of the most valuable calls that we have because we actually get to take you through real people and real cases, and you get to see how I think it through, but also how your comrades, your colleagues think things through. And we all have different bits of expertise that we can bring together. And I just really love these calls. So I am going to just share my screen with you. I'm just going to move this up just a little ways. Yeah, I'm going to share my screen and we'll go through this process. And I'm assuming everybody can hear me. If you're not on Join Me, you won't see my screen. But, and if you want to go to Join Me, the link is always in the email to just click on it. And if not, you just remember to go to join.me. And when it says join a meeting, you type in my name, Dr. Rita Marie. So I'm going to click the button and you should see my window shared momentarily. Let's see if we can do this. I'm going to shrink it down so it fits, so you don't see too much of it, and so that the video also reflects it. Again, I'm not an expert videographer on sharing 5,000 screens and thinking through a case at the same time, so the recording may or may not come out, but we'll make sure that we do our best to get it. So if you start to hear me like I fade out, then just either raise your hand with a 5. That'll say, hey, I'm getting too far from the mic, because I get excited sometimes. I'm standing up. I'm looking at stuff. I get excited, and sometimes I pull back from the mic. So we have a case that Terry, is Terry on the call? Oh, I don't see Terry. We're going to do cases of two people that are not on the call. Terry, maybe Terry's backup. Let me open up backup and see. And then Drina, who's going to come on in a half an hour, she was at work. So Terry, is that you? Hi, Terry. Is that you? Oh, good. Yeah. You just came in as a backup, so I didn't see that. But oh, that's okay. Yeah, so it's just because my days go, I've been going straight since from 9 o'clock this morning and I haven't even had time to eat. So there's no way I can look at somebody's case before a call. But if I have 48 hours, then I have, you know, I can squeeze it in between. Plus we also upload them. So so Lynn will get them in and then she'll upload them and she'll let me know. And so there's this whole process that we go through. So it's not just a matter of throw the case up. And sometimes on calls, we just do that. Case studies aren't that way, but like an open coaching call, you can throw up a lab and say, hey, can you help me with this lab? And that can be right then and there. That's no problem. But usually with the cases, it's a little bit more, well, it's more complicated, right? Because you're giving a history and maybe multiple labs and all that. So I don't even know what you gave me. I think you gave me a lab core thing or whatever. But we'll see. Okay. So I'll leave your line open. If you have noise in your background, just hit your mute button and then we'll go from there. So yeah. Okay, good. All right. So this is Terry and this is yourself, correct? Female. Is this you or is this someone else? This is you. Okay. Good. And that's fine because a lot of people do, you learn a lot by doing it. And I almost prefer when I have the person whose case it is right there because I can ask the right questions and we don't have to go, oh, let me ask her that next time. Let's come back to that in 2 weeks. So I actually prefer it. So that's good. So it's an added benefit you get in this course that you get health coaching on your own issues. And you get all these wonderful, brilliant minds on them as well. So your top three concerns, with number one being the highest, include hair loss. Wow. Okay. So yeah, that's a biggie. You know, it's interesting because there's a lot of pretty serious problems that people have. And no matter how serious their other problems are, if they have hair loss, it bumps to the top. It's really, yeah. And how long did you describe in here, or how long can you tell me how long that's been going on? Okay, so I'll get there. Off the charts, yeah. Whoa. The bovine. Yep. Wow. So you've, how long have you been off of it now? Yeah. Well. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That's great. And that was a saliva cortisol? Was it a urine, saliva, or blood? Saliva? Okay. Okay. And before you went on this bovine thing, had you tested your adrenal? Yeah. Right. Trying to fix yourself. You and a lot of people. Yeah. That's what happened to me. Yeah. 30 years ago, 35 years ago, that's what happened to me. Yeah. So, you know, this is a learning, and these, that's why these cases are so good, because this is a really good learning opportunity. Number one, I won't ever put anybody on a bovine adrenal cortex supplement unless I do a test and they're completely flatlined. And I know their DHEA is low, their cortisol is low, and I'd even want to test their testosterone, because DHEA can get converted to testosterone. And if you've got a beta 5-alpha reductase deficiency, which is an enzyme that converts you'll get more, you get a buildup of DHT, dihydroxytestosterone, which guess what? Male pattern baldness, right? The guys with the high DHT lose their hair. So it makes total sense. So I'm really careful about putting people on, even though you can get these over the counter and you can buy them, Cortef and all these other things, I stay away from them unless, and somebody's flatlined, sure. But I've even seen people who were close to flatlined. They weren't quite at the point where I would have put them on, but I was working with them and they ended up doing it anyway. And they went and got another adrenal test. Like 3 months later, I'm like, what the heck? Like their cortisol was off the charts. Everything was off the charts. They went from being very low to off the charts. And that's dangerous, right? High levels of cortisol are not just inconvenient, and it may not, you know, the DHEA may cause your hair to fall out, but it can be downright dangerous to your cardiovascular system, your digestion, etc. So really, when you're doing any kind of support with people with adrenals, other than, hey, de-stress, hey, take a sleep vacation, you know, hey, take some adaptogens that are truly adaptogens, you know what I mean? The ones like the B vitamins and the C and the nutrients, but also there's some that are just pure adaptogens. Nutrition, that's the only adrenal support I would recommend unless you've tested. So this is a good lesson to learn, right? You may have had those high levels of cortisol all along. I mean, not cortisol, DHEA all along, but she didn't test. You may have a tendency towards PCOS, which is very common. She didn't test, so she didn't know that. So you guys are going to go out on the streets armed with really great and valuable information about digging. You're exhausted. It doesn't have to be your adrenals, right? Your digestion. It could be your thyroid. It could be your blood sugar. Right? So all of those things need to be, you need to do a full and complete assessment. So it may take a while for it to come back, and you're going to want to keep testing it if especially if it doesn't start to grow back relatively quickly or it comes back. But, you know, think about it, right? You lose your hair, the hair follicles die, the hair falls out. It's going to take a while before that comes back. Although, I will tell you, we've had people who've gone on our elixirs and they have had their hair grow back in a month. Just saying. Yeah, and the other thing that's really important is the whole foundational piece, right? So I don't know what your diet's like, where you're at with that, but the gluten-free and the dairy-free and the, you know, real food diet, right? Whatever that means, but getting off of the processed stuff and the sugars and all that, that goes a long way. Getting your sleep and essential fats can be really critical. And that's why I think the elixirs really work well, because they have that combination of good fats. Okay. Okay, good. Great. Yeah, did you submit adrenal test? Okay, let me look. I think I have it. Is this it? SS? No, that's not you. Was it April 3rd? No, that's not you. No, I didn't see that. Oh, okay, got it. Oh, okay. Yeah, so there it is. Okay, got it. All right, so this is your lab. So let's finish. Can we finish going over it? Because this is just showing me the DHA. And oh, by the way, for submitting, wow, look at that. Holy cow. I'm just going to do a quick look. Thyroid antibodies, no. Ferritin, okay. You've got a little bit of thyroid peroxidase activity, so you've got some autoimmune thyroid stuff. Very light, but still there. Yeah, your TSH, your free T3 is below the optimal range. It should be 3 or above, ideally 3.25, you know, to 3.3, 3.4. So that would contribute to some fatigue. Your T4 is fine. Your free T4 is fine. But the other thing you want to do, whenever you get labs back, don't just do it this way. Put it in one of our spreadsheets. So if I'm going to open this up, and there's also a really cool, because you're going to see it graphically and you're going to learn a lot from that. But there's also a new thing that I put in the spreadsheet. Let me just find it. I'll find it. Yeah, no problem. Lynn goes over a lot of this stuff. I don't know if you've ever been to any of her calls. Oh, she does once a month. Let me see. Come on. Yeah, because she goes through, it's like an orientation of all the cool stuff that we have on the site. So this is going to be. Yeah, she's good like that. And she knows the site better than I do because I can't remember half the time where everything is in the site because there's so much stuff out there. Okay, so I'm looking for the latest of my. You know where I put it? I know where I put it. Oh, you know, never mind. I'm just going to show you on the screen. Let me just go back to that screen. If I show you on. Okay, so this is a file. That's not it. So let me go to the on the website. I'll show you where you can download the Master Tracker, which is an amazing document. I'm going to go to. There. There. Is this INE? Nope, that's not it. Okay, let me open up a new one. And I'm going to go to INE members. Yeah, but that's the best way to do it because it's a learning experience. So every time you get anybody's stuff back, I'm going to move this over here. Yeah, it has tons of tabs. Yeah. And so, yeah, that's helpful. And we should probably make another video for that to let everybody know. So I'm gonna change this to say share window. And I'm gonna share this window. Okay, so now you should see the INE site in front of you. And if you go to resources, I believe NEPT Resources Master Health Tracker. So we're going to open that up. Oh, this is going to try to download it. See, that's why I was trying to find it on my computer, but I'm not sure where. All right, so let me just save this in here. It'll open in a second, and then I'll switch windows, and hopefully you'll be able to see it. Okay. It's just taking its bloody time. I don't understand that. Ah. Let me try opening it up this way. Yeah, I mean, there's a number of things. Do you get coverage by insurance when you do that, or do you have to pay for it out of pocket? And I'll tell you why I'm asking you that. Okay, so if you have to pay for it, then I would recommend instead of going and getting those tests, which I don't really think are all that valuable, I'm going to have you get a Dutch test. Because that'll give you everything. That'll give you your adrenals and all its metabolites. It will give you your estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, all their metabolites, and you can tell where you're at with that. And if you're going to have to pay out of pocket anyway, the blood tests are expensive. You might as well get something that's way more telling. Okay? Yeah, if you go to the lab testing page, what do you call it? The lab testing tab on the right-hand side of the VLM site, that'll be where you can find it. All right, so I've got this. I'm going to switch to this one, share window, and there we are. So this is our. Can you see it? Okay, I'm going to find the. Let me go back here. Okay, I think I. Yeah, there is a little delay usually. Where'd the lab testing one go? Supplements. You see all the tabs at the bottom? Those are all the, that's all the 50 tabs you were talking about. There's a one for Lab Results International, Lab Results US. Okay. So what you just want to do is go through and put all your numbers in here, and it'll immediately change color. So like say you put 110 in the glucose. Well, what's happening? I didn't take it. Oh, I have to hit enable editing. All right. Okay. What a mess. It changed it. Changed the, okay, it changed the size, but I want to make sure it's in the film thing. Okay, so you see where it says, okay, let's just push one, glucose, right? So if I put 110 in glucose, it turns yellow. And yellow means that it's outside of the ideal range, but within the lab range. So if I were to go down to your thyroid number, right, you had a, what was it, a 12 for your thyroid peroxidase antibodies? Yeah? Sure. Oh. Oh, it went off. You know, this thing is so... Share window. Okay. What about now? You can? Okay, there it is. Yeah, there it is. Yeah. So if you put a number in, like you had a TPO antibodies and your naturopath said, well, that was fine, everything's fine. But if you put that 12 in here, right, it's going to say it's not a good number. It's not outside what the lab considers, but, you know, they think that they think crazy things. Let's just say that. They try to get within the 95 percentile. So you've got an issue with some thyroid stuff. And so just take your time, download this, create your own file. But the other thing I want to show you in here that's really cool is for thyroid numbers. And everybody, you know, we went through this at Shine a couple of years ago, but this is where you can map your TSH, your free T3, and your free T4. So I'm just going to have you read me the numbers so I don't have to flip screens back and forth. What's your TSH number? Okay, so I'm going to put it in the box, 2.45. You see how this says 2.21 to 2.6? That's where it belongs. Okay, now what's your free T4? Okay, so you're over here, 1.07. And then what's your free T3? Yes, yeah. 2.9. Okay. That's okay. Everybody goes through there. You got to lose your virginity sometime. There you go. Okay. So it's, whoops. It just went weird. Did it go weird on you? Share window. Okay. Okay, good. So it should be back now. So we ideally, in somebody who's perfectly balanced, all three of their numbers are going to fall in this little spot at the zero. Okay. You know, maybe they'll go at minus one or plus one, but the ideal is to have them in alignment. You're doing pretty well with your free T4 to free T3. They're both on the low end of normal. See how they're below the zero point? So they're low. But the conversion seems to be okay between free T4 and free T3 because the ratio's fairly consistent because they line up. But your TSH is over here. And this makes sense because when the TSH, well, actually, this is very consistent because the TSH is 2 points above and the T4, T3 is 2 points below. And the TSH starts to creep up when the thyroid has to be stimulated more fiercely by the pituitary. Okay, so there's some sluggishness going on in your thyroid here. Okay, and that could attribute to some of the fatigue as well. Okay, so I just wanted to share that with you and everybody else. Make sense? So we can't just take, and when you look at things in at face value, like just look at the numbers, it falls within the normal range. You don't really get an accurate description because you don't know how in the range it is. But when you use this chart for the thyroid, and even when you just use your numbers here, and when you go through the lab testing module, you're going to learn a whole lot more about, you know, ratios and things like that. But you'll see that, well, even though the doctor said, well, they may hopefully didn't say that 110 was not a good number, but if you had a 99, they probably tell you your glucose is perfectly fine because you're not pre-diabetic yet. But you're not because you're not ideal. What was yours? 83. Yeah, so yours is good and it'll turn green, right? And so you put this all through and you can eyeball. This makes it really quick and easy when you're working with a client, is because you can eyeball down and see right at a glance what things are the ones that you want to start paying attention to the most, versus when you just look at this sheet of paper that you have, it's just a bunch of numbers on a piece of paper, and then you have to look at the ranges. There's no graphical and there's no, you know, emotional connection to it, right? This gives you a really good way of looking at these things, okay? And you learn at the same time, because if this was, let's just say this was 56, that's clearly out of range, you can come over here and say, I wonder what that might mean. Oh, gout. Well, you want to rule out the things that are listed here. It doesn't mean they have all these things, but it means that these are potential. As you fill this chart out, what I like to do is go here and then use my little tool. And that was an orange, so I'm just going to make it orange. And as I go through the page, I can see patterns. I go, wow, there's like five markers for kidney issues. Maybe this person has a kidney issue or leaky gut or whatever. You see? So it just gives you a more, a way to really think about it. It's not as automated as the blood chemistry software that you have access to, and that's great. And we love to give people reports from that. But this helps you to actually do part of the thinking and the learning on your own. So it starts to get to the point where you just put the numbers in. I could go through one of these so quickly when they're in the chart versus when I have to go through your list. I have to go, okay, what's the normal range? What's the ideal range for that? I don't remember what the ideal range is for everything. For some things I do. Make sense? Yeah, you're welcome. All right, so I'm going to go back to that other sheet which had, let's see. Yeah, so we'll go back and change the share window. All right, so the three problems you're having are the hair, the acne, inflammation that causes redness on your and acne on your face. Used to be your number one until the hair. Yeah. And then the body mass, they'll come about when other things are corrected. Okay, so you don't have any other, so you said fatigue though. And so you didn't write fatigue down here at all. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So I think you have a blood sugar regulation problem that needs to be addressed, or this isn't going to go away. No amount of adrenal adaptogens is going to fix a blood sugar regulation problem. If you have to eat every 2 to 3 hours, there's something wrong there. Right? There's something wrong with that. You're not regulating properly. Your pancreas may not be, you know, producing glucagon in between meals to keep it steady. You may be producing too much cortisol. You may have insulin resistance. So when you eat, your sugar goes way up and then comes way down. So that's a primary issue. That's a really big issue. And it doesn't mean you can ignore the adrenals, but you see your ND just jumped right in and said, oh, let's just jump in and assume that your fatigue is related to your adrenals. Didn't do a full analysis, right? Okay, so there's clearly blood sugar. Anytime you hear that somebody has to eat every 2 hours, there's a blood sugar regulation problem. And it doesn't mean you're going to tell them immediately to stop doing that and eat every 4 hours, which is more the norm, what it should be. Because like the coffee, you take it away from somebody who's completely adrenal fatigued, they can't function. So you've got to allow people to keep some of their Band-Aids while you're working on the root cause. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the thing. Wow, you ballooned to 100 and almost 200 pounds? Holy cow. And you're tall, 5'9". Yeah, okay. Wow. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And exactly. Exactly. And follow up all the way. So try to muscle through the 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours to see what's happening at that point. Because it may not be a problem. It may not be going too high at its peak, but it may be that period where you avoid because you feel so horrible there that is very telling. And that would say that you're in a hyperinsulinemia state where you're producing too much insulin. And you know, working on that is critical. But this whole thing about this redness and acne on your face, even though you're feeling like the hair is more important right now, because if that needs to be looked at, like what the heck went on there? What was happening in your life shortly before that happened? Right. How long have you cut it out for? What's like the longest period you've cut out wine and sugary stuff? Okay. And did you notice over that, if you looked at the beginning and the end of that, was there overall an improvement in that? Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Thank you. Yeah, but it's not fixing the problem, obviously, you know. Yeah. Liver. Okay. Yeah, so here's the thing, right? We tend to chase symptoms, whether we're allopathic or alternative. We tend to look for what's the cause of this symptom and what's the cause of that symptom. And even this is very reductionistic. I think what I want to do in the future for these is, instead of having you guys fill out these forms, is to actually use the sheet. And I'm going to show you where, because it really helps you to lay it out. And let me see, share window. So if we go back to the beginning here, can you see it, or is it? It seems like it. Your window is being shared. Yeah, and I'm. Yeah. Okay. So let me go to the very first one in here. Come on, I'm trying to get it to go. Usually it shows this. Nope, it's not doing it. Okay. So I start with, you know, whenever I'm working with somebody, I want to see what their future is, and this is for motivation. You clearly have the motivation, but it's also good to look at yourself, like. You said that, you know, there's certain things you do that you know maybe not in your best interest, like drinking wine or eating sugary foods. It's like, why do you do that? Like, what do you really want? So I always get people to look at their future. What do they really want? What are their goals and visions and all that? But as far as present, if you take your symptoms, and I would do go beyond the three because there's other things. And once we start to see really like a pattern of things, and then start to see when things started, you start to get the idea. I taped something with someone the other day, and I'm going to see if she's willing to let me use it as a teaching tool, because I used it and I filled out this form with her. And it was like, all of a sudden, she realized, I realized, like, oh my God, all of this stuff started at perimenopause, but she didn't put it all together. And the perimenopause was wonky because, you know, she just dealt with her mother dying and then her father ill and, you know, just all the stress stuff. And you start to put it together. And instead of going like, oh, for this symptom, I'm going to take this herb, and for that symptom, I'm going to take that herb, or I'm going to do a leaky gut repair, you're getting the big picture. Does that make sense? So when you generally, you put this, you could put in H-A-I-R-L-O-S-S. You can put in, you know, red. I'm just going to shortcut it, right? And then what was your third one that you put down? Was the weight or? Right. But we're also going to put down fatigue. Yeah, because it's your cortisol levels and your blood sugar levels are wonky. So that's not going to go away. So you could list all of them here. But look what happens when I go to this symptom time. Okay, let's just put. So the hair loss started how long ago? Okay, so that was like 4 months ago. So June. Okay, and the face, that started a couple of years ago. Okay, so 2010. So these don't have to be exact. When did you start accumulating that extra weight around the middle? Okay. And then what about the fatigue? All right. You've been dealing with stuff for a long time. Yeah. Yeah. And have you ever done anything like a cleanse or a detox or a fast or anything like that? Good. Yay. That's good. So we're going to go and we're going to skip, you know, this is stuff that you can fill out. And I think I'll talk to Lynn about that and we'll see how we can facilitate it. But I think when we do the case studies, I'm going to have you guys fill out one of these sheets for me instead. And we have them, you can put them up on a Google Drive and that way you don't have to download them, upload them, you just have to put them in. So we'll talk about if there's a way that we can facilitate that. But if I go here to the symptom thing, look at that, magic. It copied all the symptoms. I have set it up. I can easily set it up to make this copy too. I did it for somebody the other day and we'll make that change. So I could just kind of go like that and do, I don't want to do it now. But you want to look at, when you're looking at symptoms with people, right? What were the symptoms right around the time that it started? What was going on right around the time that started? And, you know, you could say there was stress or there was some other stuff, right? You want to know what was happening shortly before, in the months or years before, the antecedent circumstances, what led up to it? What are you thinking, right? And you're asking people this stuff and you can do this on yourself and you get really detailed with it and suddenly you start to see patterns. So that's why I give places for 10. You don't have to put all 10 in, but I give places for 10 different, you know, symptoms, conditions, things like that. And you start to see patterns when you put in the dates. And like I said, we can set this up so that it copies it. And then the circumstances around that, what happened before. Maybe some of these you don't have everything. What are some of the details? You know, so you talk about, well, first it started out with a few hairs on my shirt. And then I noticed this. And then I took the DHEA, you know, blah, blah, blah. And you could write the details as you're talking to somebody. But do it for yourselves, too. Right? Because it's really cool. And then you can just keep track of it. Like if you get off this call and I say, you know what, Terry, why don't you go ahead and, you know, try this herb and this and that. And you start to do it. And, you know, in a week, you're starting to feel either better or worse. You put the date in and you can put an update by each of these symptoms. You can do the same thing, you know, again and again and again. And you can actually, you start to see a pattern. Right? Whereas at one point they may have seemed like a bunch of random symptoms, you may actually see a story being told. And when you lay it out on paper like this, it really helps you to be able to understand it. So I would have everybody start with yourself and give me a little bit. I'll redo this thing. So there's a couple of things I made changes to in here so I can upload it. So Lynn, make a note for me to take this and just make those changes and upload it so Stacy can upload it back to the sheet. Of course. Right. Exactly. And as you write it, so you've started writing it and then you go to bed tonight and you wake up and go, oh my God, I forgot about this. Let me write that. And you can just keep this. And this could be your ongoing health journal and the same thing for your clients. And you know that if you have more than one client, you're not going to remember. And even if you only have one client, you're not going to remember all the details. And when you have it in a folder where they filled out this form and that form and another, which are great forms, but they're all separate papers and you scribble this and you scribble that, and then you go back to your notes and you're trying to figure it out. This gives you a way to keep track of it as you're speaking to the person and manage it. So I would highly recommend that you go through and just make, you know, really sit yourself down and think about this and fill the rest of this out and fill in some of the onset, the antecedent circumstances and the details. And then keep track of it. You know, if you just changed your diet, you just gave up coffee and the fatigue goes from a 6 to a 10, you write that down. Like every time you do different experimentations with foods or what. Because even the foods, right, I may say to you, well, you say, oh yeah, I went off of this for a while. I don't know how long ago, how long was it? But if you're writing it down, when you go back, you have a history and you have a record. And when you can sit your clients down on the, not necessarily all on the first visit, but you just kind of gather the story and keep adding to the story, it starts to become clearer and clearer. Makes it much easier for you to figure it out. Make sense? Sure. Yeah, so that's what I would recommend you do. And, you know, let me look back at your stuff and see if there's any little things that glare out at me. Because it's just, you know, you've done a lot and there's a lot of stuff here. Yes. Well, for certainly stopping those things that are going to stimulate it. What else would bring it down? Well, okay, if the hair loss is because of excess testosterone as a result of excess DHEA, which we don't know at this point, we don't have that detail, then insulin resistance can be huge with that, a huge contributing factor. Okay? The other thing is, let's see, you don't want an aromatase inhibitors, but you'd want to look up what nutrients or foods stimulate aromatase. It's an enzyme that helps convert the male hormones into female hormones. And that often can be very helpful as well. And most people have excess aromatase, and we give them aromatase inhibitors, and there's several of them, salt palmetto and zinc and other things like that. But you may actually need an aromatase stimulator. I'm just talking off the top of my head, just based on the little bit of information I have right now. So if you look that up, it's less common, but there are a few herbs and things that can stimulate aromatase. And that might help. It might. And if it makes you worse and you start to get bigger around the middle, or you start to have, you know, painful breasts, then you know maybe you went too far. But I really, really think the Dutch test, given all the things that are going on here, the Dutch test is going to tell you a lot. Yeah, well, I want to look at your vitamin D, because I see that you went from 4,000 to 2,000. Why did you go down in your vitamin D? Yeah, I'm going to look back at your report. Not. No. Here's the thing. You need that for keeping your leaky gut repaired. So what I would say in that case is, if you went up to 84, you're only taking 4,000. You're not taking 10 or 20,000. So 84 is a nice number. You want to know, what can I do to maintain at or around 84? So this test was taken when? July. Okay, so it's already been like a month and a half. You've been down to the 2,000. I would go ahead and get it tested. Just the vitamin D. Get the vitamin D tested. See where it's at. Okay? And if the vitamin D is gone down, then you know you need to bump it back up. If the vitamin D stayed the same, then you're probably good, and I'd probably retest it in another 3 months. Okay? Oh my God, it can change really quickly. Okay. She went to a different school than I did. That's just all I can say. Cortisol changes very quickly. Cortisol changes by the moment. Cortisol changes every time you get pissed off at somebody, your cortisol goes up. You know, cortisol is one of those volatile things that changes. And if she tested cortisol in the blood, is that what she did? Or was it on the adrenal test? Is that the saliva? 3 months, 3 to 4 months. If you're flatlined and you're doing something, I want to know in 3 months if you're on the right track. Absolutely. Yeah, if it's crazy low like that, you want to be going in there and working on it, and then going back and say, am I on the right track? Am I taking enough of this stuff, too much of this stuff, right? Especially if she puts you on that, cortex, the adrenal cortex, bovine. That stuff, you should be testing six to 12 weeks with that, because that can shift it so bloody quickly. And you don't know where you were before, so you don't know if you already had high DHEA, you just know after. But I've seen it. I saw somebody who said, I said, what the heck did you do? Was it just all these adaptogens we've overshot? She goes, well, I've been taking something I didn't tell you about. I'm like, oh. So she was taking the adrenal, the bovine thing. And it went up so dramatically in just 3 months. So yeah, I think these things change, and I'm not faulting anybody else's process, but I think that what I want you to get is that these things are volatile. You don't have the God answer that says, oh, I saw this and this is what you do, and you just do it for the rest of your life and you'll be fine, or just do it for 3 months and then you're done. People, the biggest mistake that I see that practitioners make is not retesting. And I see people all the time. They come in and they go, oh, no, I don't need an adrenal test. That's not my adrenals, because I did that 3 years ago and I went on the supplements. And I'm like, oh, okay. So how long did you stay on? Oh, I stayed on for 3 months. Great. And then what was the test results after that? Oh, we never tested again. The doctor just said I could take it for 3 months and I'm done. Like, who does that? That's not scientific. Right? And if you're feeling like on the edge, on the top of the world, and you're everything, all the symptoms go away, then maybe then you go, okay, I'm not going to deal with it. But you also don't want to run the risk of taking something that's working, but taking it for too long and having it throw you out of balance on the other end. Make sense? Well, the Dutch will test the adrenals. It'll test the DHA, the testosterone, all the metabolites of the testosterone, all the metabolites of estrogen and progesterone, and a couple of melatonin and a couple of other things. So it'll just really give you a full picture and we'll know where to go. And especially with metabolites, because that's the thing with hormones. When you start messing around with hormones, you don't want to push somebody into having more of the faulty metabolites. And the next test we're going to look at is a gene test. And there are some genetics that would say you got to be really careful with somebody that could potentially increase their estrogens, because if they're going down the pathways towards the dangerous metabolites, you can get them in trouble. So that's why I like the Dutch, because it gives you all of that. Make sense? Okay, any other questions before we go to Drina? Oh, you're welcome. You're totally welcome. All right, thanks, bye. Oops, my window's being shared. Which window? I don't know. All right, so let me go back to my screen. Where's my screen? Okay, there we go. I'll put your hand down and... anybody else have questions or comments, or was that helpful? Was that useful? I know a lot of you have heard this stuff before, but I know that cases never get old, and even if you've heard it before, there's always nuances, and this stuff never gets boring. Okay, so let's see who we've got in here. Oops, Michelle. Hey from Michelle. Moving my mouse. Okay, now I'm moving my mouse on top of my iPad soft case, so that's working. When I was moving it before on top of my raise up and down desk, it's very hard, and it was you were getting this like this thing. Michelle, Lynn wanted to know where this is the Master Health Tracker. You know it. What's TRT program? Is that Dr. Emery's thyroid? Yes. Oh, you're talking about the thyroid thing. Yeah, that's in our thyroid program. And any of you who are in mastery and certification, you have access to all the equivalent consumer programs that we have. And I highly recommend that that's where you get started. If you're like wanting to learn about the thyroid, go through the modules in that program. You'll learn a tremendous amount. And then you'll be even more ready when we open up the thyroid module in a couple months. Let's see. This charting is a huge game. It is, and we'll do more of this. I want to do more of this, and I really want to get you guys doing it. And I think maybe on the next lab call, we won't do anybody's labs. We'll just do taking it. Here's what we'll do. I just had a brilliant idea, and you guys can tell me if you like it. So before we do our next lab thing, you guys gather your own labs and get as much of it put into the master tracker as you can. And I'm going to walk you guys through some filling out this form for yourself. And if you get to do it in advance for yourself, great. If not, you know, if you're confused by the form, I'm going to take you through step by step what all the different charts are. Because I think it can be valuable, and it's also valuable for you to be able to use to track your clients. All right, let's see. Oh, I talked about being resistant, probably insulin resistant. Because, okay, so if you've heard of PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome, it's usually a condition where a female has excess male hormones, usually testosterone, DHT, but it can also be DHEA. And a lot of times that can happen because they aren't converting to, or they might be, yeah, they're under converting from the testosterone to estrogens. That, it's not as common, but I wanted her to look at that. So I said, well, if she's insulin resistant, and insulin resistance is one of the key causes of polycystic ovarian syndrome and the testosterone dominance in females. So that's what I meant about that. Isabel, great question. With vitamin D in the 30s, what's a safe dose to take? If I were you and I had a vitamin D in the 30s, I would take minimum 10,000 for 6 weeks to 2 months and then retest. And then I gauge it. Here's my thing with vitamin D. And if you want to learn more about it, go to the micronutrients module, and in the vitamin D section, I go through my process for figuring it out. So somebody gets their vitamin D tested and they're in the 30s, say. Well, if we don't have history on them and we don't have like a track record of, well, a year ago I was taking this much vitamin D and my level was this, and 6 months ago I was here. If you just have this one point in time, you want to create that history. So you do the test and they're in the 30s. And I would say safely, you can easily take 10,000 for 6 weeks to 2 months and probably not get over the top. I've had people go and take, the best response I ever saw was someone who went from an 8 to 100 or 98, something like that, in 6 weeks to two months by taking 20,000. I've also had people who have taken 20,000 for a year and a half and not gotten above the 60s. So everybody's different. There's vitamin D receptor issues that are genetically modified, vitamin D absorption. There's issues related to gut flora. There's so many things that affect vitamin D. Sulforaphane, lots of cruciferous vegetables can actually help vitamin D absorption. Most people don't know that. Anyway, so I would do it. You're in the 30s. I do it for 6 weeks to 2 months, and then you go back and test it again. So if you've taken 10,000 for that length of time, and you go back and you're in the 40s, it says you're one of these slowpokes, right? So I would either go back and do another 6 weeks of that same dose, or I would actually bump it to 15 or 20 and do that for another 6 weeks. Okay, and if that goes up and it gets you into the 80s, now you're in a good range, but you want to know, what's it going to take to keep it there? If you drop it back from the 15 or 20, are you going to drop back the level? So once you get it to the 80s, I would say if you're on 15 to 20 to get it to the 80s, then maybe you drop back a little bit, 2,000 to 4,000. And then you retest again in, you know, at most 3 months. And you keep retesting it until you get to the point where, okay, we got the idea. This person's really slow. They need a lot of vitamin D. Or, no, this person responded fast. They were just deficient, and we can maintain them at 2,000. Rare for a person to be able to maintain at 2,000 in this day and age with all the issues that are going on. Oh, I'm going over your Dutch test tomorrow? Okay, that'll be fun. I didn't know we had another one tomorrow. We have another one tomorrow? We have a lot of calls this week. How'd that happen? The Dutch test is cool. So if you can come on, if I'm going to go over that test tomorrow, I will. Did you submit it already, Michelle? I think you did. Because we've been talking about you getting a Dutch test for a long time. And we're going to be having, we're going to be doing our Shine that's coming up in October. We're doing a lot of lab testing stuff. The whole thing is on lab testing and functional testing. And we're going to have reps from that company. Actually, they think they're going to Skype in and be able to talk to us about that test and answer questions about it. So Shine is a good thing to do. Yes, that's it, the Shine Conference. Oh, it's the INE office hours. So we may, you know, that's not the best call to handle a test as complicated as Dutch. So I may just be able to cursory over it. But we have another call, I think it's tomorrow night. That's our open office hours call. and we could do it that way. It's crazy that we had those three calls all in 2 days, but I think it had to do with my vacation schedule over the summer. Yeah, so we may not be able to do the whole Dutch test on an INE office hours call just because people come. Those are more for quick questions, not so much going over extensive labs, you know, going over an adrenal redo or something like that. But Dutch, we may not be able to get to all of it, but we'll get to it somehow. I think it's 7:30 tomorrow night. Okay, that's it from there. So is Drina on? Don't see Drina. Drina, are you one of the backups? Drina, if you're on, put your hand up with a 5. And I'll open your lineup. I hate to go over it without her on. She said she was coming on at 8, but I don't see her. Oh, there she is. Yay. Okay, good. All right, let me open you. Hi, Drina.
Hi.
Hi. All right, let me get your test up. Sure. Did you fill out like a whole case study form? Because I'm going to look through. Okay, no, it's good. It's short. Okay, so Drina gave me one of her, it's a Stratagene, which is a new report for genetic testing that Dr. Ben Lynch came out with. So we've got you, you're not overweight, you're good weight, insulin digestion hormones, we're not going to go into all this. I'm just going to kind of do a cursory since we're going to do the genes, and I'm going to refer back to this based on what we see there. Raw food lifestyle, that's great. Gluten, soy, dairy, sugar, and corn-free, great. No cases, okay. Where you get the current habits... Stress of a divorce, that's really stressful. No medications. You do have some supplements you're taking, B12, DHA, B1, B5, B6. Are those activated forms of the B vitamins, Trina? Wow. Yeah, you could just ask them what the form is. So, you know, they may not know what that means either. Well, like a methyl B12, riboflavin, you know, B5 would be pantothenic acid. That's fine, calcium pantothenate. But B6 would be like a P5P. And B2 is another one that's a real strong activated. And then if you do folate, you want to get a methylated folate. So those are good questions to ask in general. Perfect. Yes, that's it. That is. Yeah, the active forms are the ones that are active in the body versus they don't have to be converted to an active form. Like cyanocobalamin, the cyano B12, that body can't use that. Body has to convert that. B6 in the form of pyridoxine hydrochloride, the body doesn't use that form. It uses the form P5P. So... although there's some discrepancies about whether it gets dephosphorylated and then phosphorylated again, but that's another long story, and you can get all those details in our presentation in micronutrients. So holy basil, probiotics. So you're taking a lot of good stuff. And you've got good habits. Awesome. Okay, so let's take a look. And when you say insulin digestion and hormones, what does that mean to you? Like, what kind of presentations are you showing with that? Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Okay. And have you done your hemoglobin A1C to see where that is, the average is? Do you remember where it was? You don't remember what it was. Yeah. Because sometimes, you know, it just, that's the way it goes. And if your hemoglobin A1C tends to be in the 4.8 to 5 range or 4.5 to 5, I'm not as concerned about it unless you have actual symptoms, unless you're showing, you know, you can't get rid of the belly fat, you're fatigued, etc. What was it? 5.3? So a little, yeah. This is a good point. This is a good point to address, right? Because we have our ideal ranges and they're, you know, they're not 100% absolute. So if you were saying to me, yeah, and I just can't get rid of this belly fat and my number won't go above 89 and I feel kind of brain fogged, they say, well, you know, it's something we need to work on. But it may be just normal for you. It may be just that's where you're at. You certainly can try some of the other things, like you said, the bursts and stuff like that, a sleep vacation. Are you sleeping enough? Nice. It's very consistent, isn't it? Okay. Yeah, so it's still in the 80s. It's still in that ideal range. It's ideally, right? It's not in an insulin, a diagnosable insulin resistance range. Possibly you have some pre-insulin resistance. But, you know, we have to also get away from, we have to look at the numbers, but we have to look at the numbers in light of the whole picture. Right? So it might be fine for you. I'd keep an eye on it, but I'd also do your peak. Like, where does your peak get to? Does your peak stay below 110? Okay. Yeah, so your sugar sensitive. Yeah, clearly you're sugar sensitive. How much of that is stuff you can get under control and you just do all the things you know how to do, and how much of that is in genetics? And let's take a look at some of the genetics. I'm not sure if this one has all the insulin ones, but a few months ago I posted one of our newsletters and I had a whole big list of all the SNPs related to insulin and insulin regulation. So you may want to look at that and look at the massive. The other report you may want to get is the one from mthfrsupport.com. And not that it's a great report in that it's easy to read like this one is, but it's a great report in that it just kind of gives you a table of 49 pages of all your different SNPs so you can look things up. And you can find, like, oh, what's the ones that are related to insulin resistance? Oh, of course I've got this problem. I've got, you know, 12 of the 20 of them. When I looked at my own, I had like 17 of the 20 SNPs related to blood sugar imbalance. So I struggle with it. You know, as good as I eat, I'm really careful. If I'm going to eat a half a peach, I'm going to eat it with a head of lettuce to keep my sugar down. Right. And so some of those things we just accept and you may not be able to change it. Although for me, I am able to get my fasting glucose down into the 75 range as long as I'm, you know, not doing fruit. But so this is our strategy. You guys, excuse me a second. Let me grab some water. And this is a brand new report from Ben Lynch. When you do this report, he gives you access to a new Facebook group that he created, and it's a private group, and he does periodic Facebook Lives in there, and there's a lot of lively discussion. So if learning methylation and nutrigenomics is something you're interested in, I would highly recommend you get your own 23andMe test done and then follow the instructions to pay. I think it's $30. Well, it's $30 if you're a member and $45 if you're not a member of SeekingHealth.org. And it's a great test because it's very graphical. It's not as complete as the one from mthfrsupport.com, but Dr. Lynch focused on the SNPs that he's found to have clinical relevance within the methylation pathways. And it's a really cool report because you see how on, it is quite a number of pages, 17 pages, right? So it shows you the symbols. So it's going to show you the gene and the enzyme that control, that the gene controls, and whether you have, what kind of things, what kind of diet, lifestyle, and supplemental things will increase the activity of that gene or decrease the activity of the gene. And then the circle around your gene will tell you what your status is. So if it's just like this blue, that means there's just no data on that particular SNP. The green, wild type, actually means normal. They call it wild type, but it generally means the normal pattern. Good gene from mom and dad. Heterozygous means one normal gene and one abnormal gene, if we want to call it that. And then homozygous means you got two bum genes from, you know, mom and dad both. So that's the way he puts the report out. And I think it's really cool because he starts with this chart, which we see these charts all over the place. MTHFR Support does them. GeneticGenie.org does them. And you can get these laid out for your particular SNPs. So if I look overall at her, this is her, the core SNPs that Dr. Lynch believes from his research are the core SNPs, meaning the ones that have the most clinical significance. The first one that she has that's a, it's a yellow, basically, it's a heterozygous, is SLC19A1, which is actually a folate receptor. It controls the folate receptor. The MTRRs are related to vitamin B12. So taking vitamin B12 is probably something you're going to need to do on a regular basis, especially if you're eating more of a vegan plant-based diet and you're not getting it in your food. SOD2 is one of the master antioxidants, SOD, glutathione catalase. And so having a significant SNP in there can decrease your ability to control oxidation reactions in the body. The GPX1 is related to glutathione, I believe. The NOS is nitric oxide synthase. The MAOs are, they're related to neurotransmitters and dopamine and serotonin, as are the COMTs. So that's the overall. But what the cool part about his report is, so this is the bonus ones. He throws in some bonus ones. So you're actually not looking too bad here on the basics, the cores, but you got a lot of SNPs going on. And so who was it asked earlier about vitamin A? Should I take vitamin A? Was that on one of these calls or was that an earlier call this afternoon that I had? But vitamin A, this gene controls your vitamin A conversion, right? So BCO1, sometimes you'll see it listed as BCMO1. And what this means is that you, one of your genes for convert that controls the enzyme that that converts from beta carotene into vitamin A is unlikely to be working at optimal. Usually with a double like that, a homozygous, you may be about 60 to 75% impaired, and it varies from one gene to another. So you've got some of that. So I have two heterozygouses there. You have one homozygous. What I do is I have my bottle of Seeking Health vitamin A drops, micellized vitamin A drops, and I just periodically take 2, 3, 4, 5 drops. I could take one drop a day just for insurance, 5,000 I use, but I don't always remember. And it's fat soluble, so you can store it. So that's my approach to it. So if you've got a client who's just tired of taking so many supplements, just get them to take it once a week. Just get them to take 5 to 7 drops once a week. And that will just help to, it's kind of an insurance policy. Personally, I think I probably get enough foods with beta carotene that I, you know, super saturate that mechanism so that even if I'm only absorbing 5% of it, I'm still getting enough. But just for insurance purposes, because vitamin A is so critical for eye health and all that, I will do that. Does that make sense? Oh, and there's actually a lot of these. So, ooh, yeah, you're very impaired here. I probably would do it more than once a week. I was just looking at the two, but there's actually 5 of them, and only one of them is actually normal for you. So you may want to be doing that more, you know, a couple of times a week to take a dropper, you know, bunch of vitamin A. Make sense? Yeah, you might want to, you could either do do 10 drops or do that twice a week. Okay, just because you've got a lot of possibility of impairment here. That's the only reason, okay? This FUT2, and I'll go through the details. I'm just doing this off the top of my head, but the FUT2 is related to, has to do with bifidus status in your gut, the ability of your, it's basically your mucous membranes. Your body doesn't secrete a copy of your, or a marker for your blood type into your mucous membranes, and that affects the probiotic status in your gut. I don't know what NQ01 is. We'll have to look at the next page. And HFE, those are not, I'm not knowing those off the top of my head. PEMT is related to phospholipids. And phospholipids are super important for brain chemistry and for neurotransmission. So, and it's also memory, like phosphatidylcholine is really important for that. So you've got some impairment there. And so that's probably some place that you want to be looking at. Foods like sunflower lecithin, which have really good amounts of phospholipids in them, could be really beneficial. I don't like to go for the this for that approach with the SNPs. I don't like to say, oh yeah, you have this, that means you need this supplement. Everything is predicated on having a really good diet and lifestyle and really supporting yourself, but this helps you to fine tune maybe some of the ways that you can eat or supplement that might be more beneficial to you. And you go down to this VDR, is related to vitamin D. So you've got one homozygous SNP in the VDR. So you may not be, you may need more vitamin D than the average person. And ApoE, shoot. You're an ApoE44, okay? So what that means is that you gotta be really careful with saturated fats, because your body doesn't have the ability to break them down, and you can be more subject to things like Alzheimer's and cardiovascular disease if you're not really pristine about your fat intake. So I don't say that to scare you or anything, but ApoE44 is like, that's just like, okay, I know that what that is. I'm not going to go out and, you know, eat steak 3 times a day. A paleo diet is probably not a good diet for you. Right? More of a plant-based diet with maybe a little bit of occasional meat, or even being a little bit more careful about coconut because of the saturated fat content. Not to say not to eat it at all. It's just, you really have to just watch it and watch your lipid levels in your blood. And I don't know if you've taken your lipid levels or know what they are, but it's just a matter of watching it and actually doing, I probably would do a VAP test, which goes into the small particles. Like usually we do cholesterol, HDL, and LDL, high density lipoprotein and low density lipoprotein. With a VAP test, you can actually look at the finer things and know how you're doing. Just gauge how you're doing, how your diet right now is affecting you, and do you need to make some changes. Does that make sense? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that might be related. It could also be, where's your FUT? I know your FUT was fine. Okay. Yeah, so this shows you the picture. So I really like this picture because it shows you the status of your genes. So here's one that you have heterozygous. That's the folate receptor. And folic acid, and I mean by that is, or he means by that because he did the chart, synthetic folic acid is going to slow that the function down. We don't want to do folic acid in general, but especially if you have one of these SNPs in the areas of the folate receptors. Your other two folate receptors are fine, your 1 and 2, or there was no data. Maybe there was no data. And then you see how this says, like, the things that are improve it, retinoic acid. So vitamin A helps the uptake of the folate, and folic acid, the synthetic, and dairy antibodies can bring it down. So you're on a clean, low antigen diet, which is good. So you can go through here. These are all green. You don't have an MTHFR at all. Wow. That is amazing. You're one of the two people I've ever seen that doesn't have any SNPs in MTHFR. Congratulations. Woohoo. You got some good stuff going there. Yeah, so that's really awesome. You're only the second person I've ever seen without it. And it said that 45% of the population is estimated to have at least one. And of course, we see the people who are sick and not doing well. So that's why we see a higher percentage. That's why of all the hundreds of these I've done, I've only seen two normals, because most of the people are not coming to me because they're healthy and they want to see what their genes look like. Although that's going to start happening more and more, I believe. All right, so then it tells you, so if you're going through this with a client, right, and this shows up as a red down here, you're going to go, okay, what can I do to help to support that? Oh, DHA, that could be helpful. Oh, you're going to get them to eat more algae or more fish or whatever. And then what are the things that break it down? Good old folic acid is not a goodie. He's in there all the time, is breaking it down. Make sense? And you're going to see your MTRR is on the other side. So we'll see that when we go to the other pathway, I think. So then the folate cycle SNPs, you only have the one, which is the, yeah, so that's the only one that shows up on the chart. And that's vitamin folate receptor. And it basically says major reduced folate transporter, the folates. Okay, so the factors influencing. And then you have it on the chart in graphical, but you also have it written here, which is actually nice. Okay. And it means that it's about 50% decrease in function is what they're estimated with that. So making sure you have your good folate. And that MTHFR, liposomal from Seeking Health is a good way to go. So this is the methionine cycle. So this is the other side. So the cycle we were just looking at was over here, right? And we're coming up around, and here's the MTR. You're fine. But you had an issue with MTRR. So you can help that. That needs acetylcysteine, methionine, FAD, and NAD. So those are good supports for that. What else? And it's B12. It's related to taking B12. So see that we had the cobalamin that's not methylated, and this MTRR helps to methylate it. So it says that you probably need a fair amount of the methyl. You wouldn't want to take another form unless you had a problem with a backup of methyl groups, which we don't have to talk about now, but we'll probably talk about it on somebody else's. Let's see. So basic, yeah, go ahead. Yep. There's one of them, you don't need that. There's one of them that's got a decent amount of B12, but just a tiny amount of folate. That's the one that you would need, because your folate, you've got the receptor issue, but you just have to stay away from folic acid and you're probably okay. So I would say there's one that has, it's probably every drop is 400 or 300 of B12, but only 40 of folate. That would be fine for you. I think that one would be fine for you. I don't remember the dose, but I would say with what you've got here, I'd probably be in the realm of 400 to 1,000, 400 to 800 micrograms of B12. It's, it's hard to predict. Now, you always want to watch out when you're taking methylateds. Let me look back at your COMTs. You're not in a position where you're going to have a whole big backup of, and you're not likely to have a backup of methyl groups. People who have the reds in the COMTs, and a lot of these different methylation issues can tend to have taking the methylated Bs backfire on them, and they get really anxious and irritable and hyper. So I don't see that as your issue, but you always have to keep that in mind, right? Just make sure. So some of the others you have, this one's okay. BHMT is a shortcut through the middle. We're basically trying to get homocysteine converted to methionine, and then acetylcysteine. And acetylcysteine is one of our major DNA repair, because it's a methylator, methyl donors. Okay. So that's the only one I see on here is that MTRR. Yep. So that's the one you pay attention to. So things that will decrease it. This was, I thought was interesting. I hadn't seen this before. I saw it on his report, but more than a tablespoon a day of cocoa can cause problems. So keep it to a less than a tablespoon a day of cocoa. And that would increase by that. Yeah. So there you go. You've got two of them and you have variants in both. Now, some of the other ones, the transsulfation pathway, you had your SODs and you had a glutathione. So if we look here, the transsulfation is down below. So if you look from, where are we? Homocysteine. See homocysteine here? The pathway we just looked at is right above that, and the methylation we looked at is over here. And of course, these are not sitting positionally situated like this in your cells. This is just representing them so that it's graphically easy. And I get all thrown off when I see someplace that sets it up in a way that's not the same way, because then I get all confused and I have to tilt my head to try to figure it out. But I've gotten used to his way of doing it. So if we look here, we've got the SOD and the glutathione, and you see the things that can help, that can slow it down. I've got dirt on my screen. There we go. You know, copper, so some of the minerals, copper, iron, magnesium, and zinc. And SOD, you're going to need manganese, because manganese is one of the cofactors for that, right? So let's look at this other chart, and he tells you more about it. See, you've got a whole page on that. So SOD is, it's basically super important against superoxide radicals. So, and it converts them to hydrogen peroxide. And SOD, we generate the radicals that the SOD fights in our mitochondria all the time. So it's something that's really important. So manganese is super important. Manganese is, when we did our manganese in the micronutrients, we talked a lot about how it's a manganese dependent enzyme. Okay, so the other thing, the things that if you take too much selenium can cause a problem with it, will decrease the activity of it. And lipopolysaccharide, which is an endotoxin basically that gets secreted by the bacteria, like bacteria breakdown in your gut, like dysbiotic bacteria. And these are inflammatory products, IL-1A, TNF-alpha. Exercise, I don't mean like you shouldn't exercise, but excessive exercise. When you have an SOD defect, you may not want to be an ultra marathoner or somebody who's doing like really intensive exercise, because it produces a lot of those radicals, the superoxide radicals that you're not able to moderate as well. Okay. And that's your SNP. Associated symptoms, so higher risk for osteoporosis, antioxidant stress. So really supporting yourself by avoiding oxidation, you know, by avoiding things that create oxidation, and supporting yourself with nutrients and manganese. So GPX is glutathione peroxidase. And that basically detoxes, glutathione detoxes peroxide. So there's 8 forms of glutathione peroxidase. And it protects us from hydrogen peroxide building up within the cell. Glutathione is considered a major antioxidant. So here's some of the cofactors. Well, selenium is a good cofactor for it in the form of selenoprotein. But interestingly enough, it's decreased by copper, iron, mercury, Hg, and zinc. So you want to make sure you're not in excess of those. So everybody thinks, oh yeah, just take supplements, they're good. Doesn't matter to take too much. But some of these can actually throw off these good reactions in your body. So it's always a matter of the just right principle. And it's increased, its activity is increased by things that create oxidative stress, because it has to work harder, right? High oxygen species, but also spirulina. So it can actually be supported by spirulina. Yes, and sulfur amino acids as well can be supportive. Again, you don't want to overdo it. Some people will take high levels of cysteine or NAC, and if they've got some difficulties in the glutathione, they get a backup, and you get a backup of sulfur products that build up you know, when people have too many sulfites and sulfates, they can cause allergy type reactions. And this one's probably the most complicated of all, because you got a lot of SNPs in it. But this is the biopterin pathway is essential for neurotransmitter, but also nitric oxide. And what happens is these pathways are synthesizing your neurotransmitters like serotonin, dopamine, norepinephrine, epinephrine. And you've got to have this good biopterin level. And I think sometimes you'll see it as BH4. And when you got backups in these, sometimes you get buildup of ammonia in the system. And that's not a good thing because ammonia can be toxic to the system. So if we look at what you've got here, let's go down to nitric oxide. You've got MAO, monoamine oxidase. And let's see, COM-T, a bunch of them, they're all the same, but in different places. Yeah, so it's basically the COM-T, the MAO, and the nitric oxide. So let's look at what Dr. Lynch has to say about it. So the nitric oxide synthase is basically it regulates the production of nitric oxide. And nitric oxide is really important in the endothelial linings for the health of the blood vessels. So too much is not good, but too little can be problematic. And given that you also have the ApoE, I would say it's really important that you're really protective of those endothelial linings and really protective in a lot of ways. Like you're sensitive to sugars because your glucose goes up. You don't want that to happen. So you want to be super careful about your diet. You want to be super careful about your level of insulin because you don't want to do damage to those delicate endothelial cells because of this other risk factor. And I'm not saying it to scare you or anything like that. This is just to be real, right, about why sometimes being really strict is important for some people, but not necessarily for everybody, right? It's good for everybody, but it's not necessarily vital for everybody, right? So let's see. So it's decreased by these inflammatory products, TNF-alpha, low arginine, and low arginine arginine is really important in the making of nitric oxide. But, you know, a lot of times people will do supplements of arginine to improve nitric oxide. And by the way, nitric oxide, the whole mechanism of nitric oxide is what Viagra is based on, is getting that blood flow into the right areas. Let's see. Low methylfolate. Yeah, so these are just giving you some of the things that will increase or decrease its activity, and you could read those. I don't need to go through each one of those. And you have two SNPs in that area, okay? So, it's related to your cardiovascular health is the main thing. If you're a male, I'd say it also related to your sexual health as well. You can increase nitric oxide by exercise, but not exercising too heavily, as well as eating some foods. And if you can look up nitric oxide, like, for example, arugula is a really good food for increasing nitric oxide levels. And beets are as well. Spinach too. Spinach can help with it as well. So MAO, I always look at this as the obsessive compulsive gene, and I know that's kind of silly to say that, but it's because a combination of MAO with VDR with COM-T can predispose somebody to be that, you know, just really super, like, overly attentive to detail, let's just say. Sometimes the attention to detail can get in the way, and I don't know if you experience that, like that everything has to be just so. So that tends to be a trait when the MAO is present. Is that you? Okay. Yeah. I can often predict when I'm talking to people, like, I'm going, oh, this person has an MAO or a GAD or something like that. After a while, you kind of get used to it, and it's kind of fun to guess. Okay. So it breaks down the norepinephrine, the dopamine, and the serotonin. And so when you have a sluggishness of this enzyme, you can get buildups of the metabolic breakdown products of those neurotransmitters. And it often leads to kind of an anxiety, an on edge kind of a feeling. Okay. What else? Yeah, so they're talking about a lot of things that will help, will bring it down, and a lot of things that will help it. So progesterone, alcohol, huh? That's interesting. Yeah, so I haven't studied this. I'm like, oh, okay. So I haven't looked at this in a lot of detail because this report just came out a few weeks ago. So I've only looked at two so far. One was mine. And then... the activity of the enzyme, yes, is reduced by those things. And they're increased by the things down here, the reserpine, progesterone. That's why I was surprised to see alcohol here. Valproic acid, an increase in diabetes. Interesting. Do you want to increase the activity of it? You know, I don't usually directly address this in terms of that. I mean, it's just a matter of looking at and being aware, and I would be being careful of being of taking certain things like maybe 5-HTP or tyrosine, which are precursors to those neurotransmitters. Because if you increase the levels of them, you're going to increase the metabolic byproducts and you may not break them down as much. So it could be like where you might think that giving somebody a serotonin or a dopamine precursor would make them feel better, where in this case, it might actually make you feel worse. Right? So, you know, in general, it's like keeping good activities and, you know, avoiding the basic stuff that tears you down. But quite frankly, this is not something that I ever really directly address in terms of, you know, other than be careful about taking things that are going to increase those neurotransmitters that your body just can't break down. Makes sense? And you may do more research on it, and he may have more research on his site. You can go to Snipedia, but at this point, that's all I can really say about it. Okay. And then COMT, I know a lot more about. That's catecholamine O-methyltransferase. And that's important for the breakdown of estrogen, reactive estrogen species. So when estrogen gets broken down, it's got to go through and get converted to these metabolites and then excreted. And there are some dangerous metabolites, the 4-hydroxyestrone and the 16-hydroxyestrone. And then there's more protective ones, the 2-hydroxy. So when you have levels of COMT, it could actually decrease the breakdown of those, the 4-hydroxys. Okay. Although they're saying that, I was surprised when I read this, that this heterozygous, he says here, variant associated with intermediate levels of COMT activity. And there's mounting evidence that this variant is the most balanced, which is interesting, right? You would think the green, the normal one, but you know, that's what some of the evidence is saying. So I don't really get too concerned about this if it's there, unless it's also in conjunction with some of the cytochrome P450s. I think it's 2B2 or something, where you have a difficulty breaking down the estrogen as well. Okay, so, this with this level, if you had homozygous here, these were red, I'd have you be really super ultra careful with increasing your methyl groups. I'd have you start with like one drop of that, and then go to 2 drops of that, and just watching that you don't get anxious when you take it. I mean, it still could be the case, but I would say it's not a high risk for you in this situation. Make sense? And again, this is all new, like this report. Yeah? You've dealt with this? Cleared it up. Yeah, so that's good. That's good to know, you know. And how old are you? 50-ish, right? 53? 50. Okay, yeah. So, you know, menopause, have you gone through menopause? Are you on the other side of it? Are you still going through it? Oh, wow. Really early, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Oh my. Ugh. No, thank you. Oh man. Yeah. Yeah, and you know, PCOS is just so heavily influenced by blood sugar levels. Insulin resistance is huge in the development of that. So that might be why you have some, you probably have some SNPs in the, I guess they don't show them in this report, but if you, two things you do, if you go and get the MTHFR support report and then go back to my newsletter that I did, I don't remember when it was, a few months ago, where I just did a whole bunch of the SNPs related to insulin resistance, you'll probably find that you've got a bunch of those, and that's why you're prone to PCOS and why you're unable to get your blood sugars into the where you really want them, but it may be the best you can do. And given that you had all that going on, you've done a tremendous job of cleaning it up, and it just is a big testament to the foundations and to your dedication and determination. Yeah. It's a hard work, but it's good. Yeah, it's definitely paying off, right? So that's all good. MAOB, this was a new one on me on this one. I hadn't really looked at MAOB very much. So I'm going to read it with you. Mitochondria and the catalyze it. Yeah, so it's also related to the neurotransmitters, you know, dopamine, noradrenaline, adrenaline. There's a bunch, it looks like very similar things that influence MAOA, influence MAOB. And just watch out for schizophrenia. Keep your B vitamins up. That will help. Keep that good diet up. That will help. Yeah, that's not a good one to read. You know, you got a risk factor for schizophrenia. That's why a lot of these tests, you know, a lot of doctors are opposed to doing this. And now you walk away and go, I just did this stupid test and now it's telling me I'm at risk for dementia and schizophrenia and heart disease. Lovely. Now, you know, but really it's a testament to what you're doing. And epigenetics is 95%. Genetics is only 5%. But for most people, the epigenetics is what's killing them, because they're actually expressing all these genes in a negative way because of the lifestyle. So you've taken the right steps towards this. Does that make sense? Did he? See, there you go. Oh my. Yeah, absolutely. And there, you know, if you walked in his footsteps, you could be there too. So that's, it's just amazing, because I look at my own parents, you know, and they died very young, not as young as yours, but my mom at 56, my dad 62 or 4 or something. And I have their genes, and I look at my genes and go, wow, my genes aren't so hot. But I made a decision a long time ago before the epigenetic, the genetic process, the whole biome, the genome project came out, was that I probably have bad genes, so let me just be really careful. And it pays off. Like, for example, there's another report that I really like, which goes through the detox pathways, and you can go to geneticgenie.org. You can go to the site. I don't know if you've been to the nutrigenomics page on our VLM site, but there's a tremendous amount of info there, and I have a couple of charts that I created. One of them is the detox chart, and you can look through that and see where you sit. Like, because there's also this thing with drug metabolism. So NAT2 is related to a bunch of different drugs, and you can see that if you look it up on my chart. And so it's really good to know this stuff if ever you are in an accident, have to have surgery or whatever, that you can say no wisely to certain medications that could be very problematic for you if you don't have the mechanism to effectively break it down. So a lot of the things that we learn from nutrigenomics is what to avoid to keep us from having this assault on our system that our detoxification and methylation pathways can't handle. And that's what I love about it, because it really helps to reinforce a lot of the diet and lifestyle modifications that we're recommending to people, but they see it on paper. They go, oh, I'm not going to eat hamburgers. I can't handle heterocyclic amines. And you just told me that charbroiled hamburgers are high in that. Or, you know what I'm saying? So that explains why I don't feel good when I go and pump my own gas and stand there and breathe in all these gas fumes. Or, you know, why if I get out of the car and I leave the car going in the garage to run in the house, I come back in and I feel nauseous. So it explains a lot of things to people, and it gives them some tools that they can work with to help them to become a lot more independent and a lot more responsible for their own health. That makes sense? So I'll just take a couple of minutes on these. Yeah, go ahead. Yep. Licorice. Yeah, it should be, because it's deglycerized, right? It has the glycyrrhizic acid removed. Okay, and there's a lot more, because if you go out to Snipedia and you look this up, you're going to see a long list of other drugs, and these are just some of them that they chose to put in here. So there's a lot more as well. Okay. And then the BCO1, we already talked about. It has to do with the beta carotene conversion. The FUT, you're fine on that, but more likely to be B12 deficient if that's the case, but also needing more bifidobacter is what I always look at. And it explains to me, because there's seven different FUT2s, and I think all of mine are red. And I love probiotic foods. I love that tartness of kefir and homemade yogurt and sauerkraut and all that. It's just like my mouth loves it. My body loves it. And I bet it's because I just need so much more of those good organisms because of that FUT2. So sometimes these things you find explain some of your cravings or your desires, your food desires. HFE is the bifidobacter. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. And you don't have that one here, but yeah, it's definitely, cause some people do best with the ratio of bifido to lactobacillus in the gut is like huge. And most of the supplements that people take, there's not as much bifido because bifido costs more and all that. So we get out of balance. And sometimes that out of balance with other factors can cause the organisms that are supposed to be in the large intestine to creep up into the small intestine and cause some SIBO. So that's why bifido is so important. You don't have that SNP. There are others. I'm not sure why he just chose to do that one. Maybe the others aren't clinically relevant, but you know, it's definitely something that's to keep in mind. And the other one that I didn't remember before, and I should remember, is the hereditary hemochromatosis, because we have that in my family. My brother has, but you have, that's kind of odd that you don't have. Have you looked at your blood levels, like your ferritin levels and your iron levels and those sorts of things? Do you have any indication of hemochromatosis? High red blood cell? Okay, good. Well, this is something to keep in mind. I would avoid taking iron supplements. Okay, because you can end up with the buildup of ferritin. And sometimes it doesn't show up until later in life. I mean, you're 50, so you would expect it to show up by now, but it could be that you're controlling it by some other factors. But my brother actually didn't find out he had hemochromatosis until he was like 45. But his was like, his ferritin was 400 or something like that, 800. So you just have that genetic. So just keep that in mind. If ever that shows up on your blood cells and you're starting to see them increase, you're starting to increase in ferritin, just know that that's a risk factor for you. Okay. Oh, yeah, this is the one that I said, the phosphatidylcholine and phospholipids. You know, I love sunflower lecithin. I throw it in smoothies and things like that just to get extra phosphatidylcholine. Really good for memory, and it's just good overall. Yeah, it can come, you can get it as little crystals that you can pour it into stuff, but I like the liquid form. It's kind of like a gooey, almost molasses, not sweet, but it has that molasses consistency. That's in, yeah, choline is, you know, you can get choline, but I'd rather you get it from food. So that's why I said sunflower lecithin has choline, phosphatidylcholine. So yeah. I prefer food based if you can do it. Right. If you were, you know, really like explaining to me how your short-term memory is shot, your memory, you can remember things, I might say, let's get you on some choline temporarily while we increase the level with food, because you want to get some results quickly rather than having no memory for an extra 3 or 4 months while the choline levels build up from the food. But it's just a good way to keep yourself, your levels good. Last few, FADS, you're a GG, and it's saying you'd have a higher level of arachidonic acid, which would could lead to inflammation. So you want to make sure that you're doing good omega-3s, especially EPA, because EPA can balance out the arachidonic acid that negatively affect arachidonic acid. And again, another reason to avoid excess use of animal products, because they're high in arachidonic acid. So that this with your APOE, I would say, you know, mostly a plant-based diet would be best for you. Could, but you can do, if you're occasionally having salmon, that's fine. That's not heavy saturated fat. That's fine. That's actually fine. It's the meat, it's the red meat with the saturated fat and the arachidonic acid that I'd watch for. But no, fish is fine, because fish has the omega-3s, the EPA DHA. Yeah, that's good. And as long as you're doing it with your B vitamins and magnesium and vitamin C and all those cofactors to convert it, you're probably fine. And you can have too much omega-3. I just tested somebody today and I had to like convince her that no, you got to stop. Well, I'm taking 2 tablespoons of cod liver oil and I'm taking these 2 droppers full of this omega-3 thing. And I'm like, but I need it because I read it in this book that, you know, I'm like, honey, your test is showing that you don't need any more and that you're at a dangerously high level of it. So, you know, sometimes we get those folks that just want to take everything because they read it somewhere. And when we can show them on paper, and even then sometimes they argue. But yeah, you don't want to go too far in the other direction either. And we'll be doing a session. We'll talk about it also at Shine, the blood spot fatty acid test. Okay, and then these are your vitamin D receptors, and you've got one that's homozygous. So, you know, just making sure that you maintain those optimal levels, because if you have low levels and your receptors aren't very good, you're going to be even more low in the cellular uptake and use of vitamin D. So when I see somebody with the VDR, I'm like, you want to get as close to that 100 level. And sometimes they can even get away with more, but 100 would probably be, you know, 80 to 100 range for your vitamin D. So make sure you get your vitamin D tested and maintain it and regulate it. Okay? And there's a whole article there on the APOE I just saw, so you might want to read more about that. There's a whole book on it called The APOE Diet as well. And it just talks about the different APO types and what they mean. Okay? Phew. How's that? Was that helpful? I'm getting better at this test. I've only done this twice. This is only my third one. So, but I've done other genetic stuff. So in his nice format, it makes it easier to explain. So good. Yes.
Exactly. Well, join his Facebook group. You got access to it by doing the test. It's the strategy Facebook group. He's posting all the time. He's got lots of good conversations going there, and he's periodically doing a live call. But also go into the VLM part of the membership site and the Nutrigenomics module. We have probably 20 hours worth of stuff in there right now. And a lot of it is just me going over various people's stuff, like hours and hours and hours of me going through the different things. So you learn it pretty well when you start to hear me over and over and over again. And, you know, I've learned a lot more since then. So there's probably some stuff in there that I, you know more about now, because this is an evolving science. This is brand new in its infancy state. Okay. And he's going to be updating these reports, he said, as they get new stuff, you know, and they'll notify us when they get new stuff. So I'd highly recommend that everybody just get yours done, and because it's a learning experience going through this one. And personally, this, I wrote this in, I think, last week's or week before his newsletter, was that I would recommend that you get your 23andMe done. And if you've already done it, then make sure you just do all the different kinds of reports that are available. It'll cost you maybe an extra $150 to do that, but it's such a great learning experience to do it. You got the Stratagene, you've got the mthfrsupport.com, you've got two free ones at Genetic Genie, the methylation and the detox. And then there was one other one. Oh, the MTHFR. Oh, what's it called? Oh, metabolic. Lynn, help me with this one. Metabolic. Okay. I think I actually included my reports on that in that newsletter a couple of weeks ago, so you can actually see it. Lynn, what is it? Metabolic healing. Metabolic healing. Yeah, and they have that. So if you run those four reports, it'll probably cost you $120. Oh, good. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. So that'll be helpful, because then you can actually study all the different ways that it's laid out, and you're going to get better and better at it with your own clients the more you learn it. And be sure to go into our group, our thing on the VLM side. Okay. Great. Thanks. Thanks for sharing. I love when you're able to share. So it's awesome. Thanks. Bye-bye. Yeah, it's going to be fun. It's going to be a lot of fun. Thank you. Bye. You too. Bye. Anybody have questions or comments about that? Was that helpful? Was that boring? Was that over your head? I mean, every time you hear it, it's you learn more. So don't worry about it if you're relatively new and you haven't, you're like, what the heck is she talking about? It just keeps sinking in more and more and more and more and more. And after a while, you understand it and you go, oh, well, I actually am getting this. All right, so let's see what some other of the... Okay, so those are from before. We talked about the optimal level. Michelle asked, you know, and it depends. Lynn answered 75 to 90. I actually, you know, I like it higher. If somebody has those VDR SNPs, I like to see it 80 to 100. And if they have autoimmune disease, I like to see it 80 to 100. It just depends. But I, definitely not below 8, definitely not below 75. What does that mean? So will we do the test on the joint? Oh, the Join Me site. Okay. Yeah, that's what we're doing. Okay, so let's see. Yeah, so Michelle, if you want me to go over your Dutch, probably tomorrow night's call would be better than the daytime. Because if it was, like I said, just an adrenal test, they're quick and easy. You're looking at some of your thyroid numbers. I could do that easily on an INE call. But with those calls, like the Dutch test could take a good half hour to go over for just your one test. So you can do that on the evening call. Oh, Lynn recommended if you're always not going below that 89, I think that's what she's talking about. Have you checked your glucose meter? Oh yeah, so Lynn, I keep forgetting about that, Lynn, because I've never used it. There's an herb, Denelia, has a lot of vitamin A in it.
So yeah, that could certainly be good. It's just not something I'm used to using. I'm going to have to try it myself. When I run out of vitamin A, I'll buy some of that. PMT is the enzyme responsible for synthesis of choline inside the body, right? Coconut, many places suggest adding coconut oil with 4-4. I haven't seen that, Mary. I'd love to see where they're recommending that. Maybe MCT oil, because it's but I don't know if, you know, because coconut is saturated. So I'd have to look to see if the studies are just that it's a problem with the saturated animal fats, but I'm thinking I'd be careful about it. I'm not saying I would get rid of it completely, but I would be a little bit more careful about the 4-4. The VAP test doesn't exist anymore, but you can get the individual pieces. Lipoprotein particle test developed by SpectraCell, NMR lipoprotein by LabCorp, or Cardio IQ through Quest. So there you go. And this is all in there. Lynn, will you make sure we copy this chat and put it with the recording so people have access? And we'll also make sure that the recording of the, in fact, I'm going to stop it so we're not doing it anymore. I'll just stop the recording. Well, actually, I'll make it go to the end. That way it'll be complete. Lynn put the link to the Vibrant Living members. She put a link to all kinds of stuff. And she put a link to Amazon, the book, The ApoE Diet. Or The ApoGene Diet is what it's called. Melody just got my strategy and report today too, so this was so informative. Great, wonderful, I'm glad. You know, the more we do it, the more you hear it, the better you're gonna be and the quicker it can be. After a while, I'm not gonna do these. I'm gonna have you explain it and then I'll just add some stuff if there's anything you miss. Because that's the way you're gonna really learn it, because you have to be able to explain it to your clients. So I'm gonna, you know, start to work at that and have you explain things to me after I feel like you've heard them enough time. Okay, so Michelle will be on the evening call. Yeah, and you're looking at, Mary, are you asking about adenosyl B12? I think, yeah, Seeking Health definitely carries adenosyl B12. And I've seen some really amazing results. I've had some really complicated cases, and one person who had some issues with, and she would take the methyl groups, and it wasn't good whenever we'd get her on the methyl groups and even some of the Bs. And when we got her on the adenosyl B12, something just happened, like it lit up her brain, it turned her on. And the adenosyl is the mitochondrial form of B12. So people with have low mitochondrial function and low energy work really well. Mary said it works well for her too. Great. Okay, I think that's it. No other questions? You can raise your hand. This is your last chance. Otherwise, I'm going to take a break. I've been going and talking nonstop since 9 o'clock this morning, so my voice needs a little bit of a break. Anybody else? I'm happy to answer any other questions. No? All right, I'm going to open your lines and we will, let's see if I can do that. Open your lines and then we will say goodbye to each other. And we have plenty of opportunities the rest of this week to get together. So, bye everyone. Bye-bye. Talk to you soon. You're welcome.